Inspire loyalty in anyone. What is it that makes a person stick by you in the darkest hour, while others run for the hills at the slightest hint that something is wrong? Are you tired of fair-weather friends who stab you in the back the minute you turn around? Whether it is a friend, employee, or spouse, you can make anyone more loyal to you, your company, or your cause. The following techniques contain the components, the building blocks, that make a person, any person, form an unshakable allegiance. Technique 1. Bring him in on the inside. A person's loyalty is determined by which side of the fence he thinks he's on. Therefore, if you bring him to your side and make him part of your team, he will fight your battles with you against the other guys. To turn an outsider into an insider, you need to give him information that few people have, as well as some degree of power or authority within your organization or team. Example: a sales manager has a salesperson whose loyalty is questionable. During a relaxed, private conversation, the sales manager should say something like, "Chris, I want you to know that there are going to be some changes around here. Mainly, we're close to acquiring the XYZ account, and we think you are the key person on the team to figure out how we can best service them. Now, this is not public yet, so we need to count on your discretion." It's amazing how quickly this technique helps to build allegiance. Now that Chris is a big shot, on the inside with a little bit of power, he won't be turning on his manager anytime soon. Technique 2. A part of greatness. Studies show that the moods of sports fans are affected by the teams they support. When a football team wins, the fans feel great. But when the team loses, the fans feel worse. Moreover, how people identify with the team is fascinating. When their team wins, they say, "Our team won." But when they lose, they often say, "They lost." They give up their identification when things are not going smoothly. We all want to be part of something great, to be with someone great, and to attach ourselves to a winner. To inspire loyalty, let others see the greatness within you or what it is that you want them to believe in. You accomplish this by being the one who does what is right, even when an easier course of action is readily available. Let's say you are playing a game of Trivial Pursuit with friends, and an argument ensues over whether another player's answer is right. If you believe it is, then voice your support for that player. In other words, take a position that is unfavorable to you. Long after the game is forgotten, you will be known as the person who took the high road, even though it was not in your best interest. People will seek you out and want to be part of what you do. A principled person stands alone in the ability to command unwavering loyalty. Technique 3, little by little. We all have a strong desire to stand by our convictions and to think of ourselves as someone who is consistent. When we flip-flop too much on things we say and do, we can feel less secure and confident. Research in this area illustrates how effective this psychological factor is when it is applied to instilling loyalty. For example, when people are presented with a small request and subsequently comply with it, they are much more likely to agree to a larger request as long as it is consistent with a smaller one. When they take a small step in one direction, people are driven to maintain a sense of consistency by agreeing to larger requests. Simply, those who agree to a smaller request reshape their attitude and beliefs to include the definition that they are individuals who support this idea. Therefore, agreeing to the larger request is just doing something for a cause that they already firmly believe in. Friedman and Fraser asked homeowners to let them place a huge "Drive Carefully" sign in their front yards. Only 17% gave permission. Other residents, however, were approached with a smaller request. Asked to put up a 3-inch "Be a Safe Driver" window sign, nearly all immediately agreed. A few weeks later, these homeowners were asked to place the gigantic "Drive Carefully" sign on their front lawns. This group, 76% consented, overwhelmingly agreed. Called the "foot in the door" technique, this study demonstrates the tendency for people who have first agreed to a small request to comply later with a larger one. Example: you want customers to be more loyal to you and your company. To instill loyalty in customers, invite them to the company picnic. Have them speak to and get to know your employees. Ask them for references, referrals, suggestions on how you can improve your business relationship. These little steps build internal momentum and are effective for establishing loyalty in anyone. Clearly, such customers must care about your company because they have invested themselves in it. In order for them to leave you, they have to justify to themselves why they have put so much time and energy into their relationship with you. This forces them to come up with reasons for staying loyal to you, even when more favorable conditions might be found elsewhere. When people don't have anything invested, emotionally, financially, or otherwise, they're quicker to jump ship. So get customers involved when things are going well, little by little, as part of a team or cause, and you will find they will stand by you in more difficult times. Technique 4. The power of humility. President John F. Kennedy's approval rating went to a record high in 1961 after the Bay of Pigs fiasco, undoubtedly because it showed that he was human, fallible, and humbled. He made a mistake and took full responsibility for it. If you are too full of yourself, there will be no room for anyone else. No one wants to listen to or follow anyone who is egotistical. While you may get people to pay attention to you when they have to and when it suits them, when the going gets rough, they'll get going. 6 powerful ways to demonstrate humility. 1. Doing a job that some others might consider beneath them shows the world that you are a person of the people and that you are willing to do what it takes at the expense of personal sacrifice for the larger cause. The CEO who picks up trash from the factory floor inspires workers to do the same and more. 2. The fastest way to lose someone's loyalty is to lie to him or her. Deceit equals arrogance, which is the opposite of humility. Even if the person does not like the news, your truthfulness speaks volumes and communicates an important message. You can be trusted. Moreover, people will take their chances with someone who is trustworthy over someone who tells them what they want to hear or who tries to cover up something. Always be honest and truthful in your dealings. This does not mean being blunt and rude. Rather, seek to be as kind and as respectful as you can, but never sacrifice the truth. Honesty illuminates fine character like a beacon in a fog of phonies. 3. Do not be a know-it-all, and when you are wrong, admit it. When you admit you are wrong, others realize that they are not going to be a bunch of lemmings following you off a cliff. Owning up to your errors shows responsibility as well as humility, 2 key traits that inspire loyalty. 4. When you do not know the answer to something, do not give one. Simply say, "I don't know." You'll be amazed at how much attention gets paid when you do have the answer to a question. 5. Treat everyone with respect, especially those from whom you don't need anything and who can't do anything for you. When you have to treat someone with great respect, you show their greatness. When you do the same for someone when you don't have to, it shows your greatness. 6. Share the credit. Whenever you are acknowledged for your work, be sure to mention each and every person who contributed, even in a small way, to your success. If you do these few things, you will exemplify what it means to be humble. You will be seen not as weak, but as someone who is strong, and this strength will inspire others to attach themselves to you. Eliminate prejudice in anyone. Do you know people who are downright bigots or racists? The following techniques show you how to open their minds and get them to rethink their false and damaging beliefs. Of course, it is naive to assume that you can eliminate their prejudices overnight. However, research has shown these approaches to be the most effective, and they will allow you to make inroads, if not great strides. Technique 1, the power of emotions. Emotion creates motion. Emotions, not statistics, data, or cold hard facts, are the energy that fuels our thinking and choices in life. In fact, An estimated 90% of decisions are emotionally derived, and we then use logic to justify them. Every time chain smokers take a cigarette from the pack, they read that cigarette smoke may cause cancer. What are they thinking? I could get hit by a bus tomorrow. Or, my Aunt Sally lived to be 100 years old and she smoked every day since she was 9 years of age. Reach a person's emotions and you get to the real decision maker within. There is nothing like startling images or seeing something for yourself up close to invoke emotions. In our morning newspaper, we can read that 2,000 people were killed in an earthquake in Chile and then immediately glance at the gossip page with barely an audible "how awful." But just one picture of a small girl sitting and crying in the rubble next to her mother who died in the earthquake does something more. It pulls at our heartstrings. It causes pain. It has been said that anyone who visits a hot dog factory will never eat a hot dog again. Apparently, the manufacturing process is so visually appalling that it is tough to get the images out of your head. Even though we may know that the U.S. Department of Agriculture permits a certain amount of hair, blood, and bone in hot dogs, seeing it for yourself is a whole other story. Technique 2, a first-hand account. Technique 2 uses two powerful psychological processes, social proof and cognitive dissonance. Briefly, social proof is a power tool of influence that says when we see others, particularly those whom we respect and admire, do something, we are driven to adopt similar attitudes and behavior. This is why advertisers use celebrities in ads. The thinking is, if this person whom I like uses this product, then I should too. Cognitive dissonance can be illustrated by the story that follows. Bill buys a watch for $500. Later, flipping through a magazine, he sees what seems to be the same watch advertised for $300. This produces an emotional inconsistency in Bill. He wants to see himself as a smart guy and a savvy shopper, yet the ad suggests evidence to the contrary. Bill can believe one of two scenarios. Either he was duped and he overpaid, or the advertisement is not what it appears to be. His level of self-esteem determines the outcome. If he has high self-esteem, he would believe he made a mistake. If he has low self-esteem, he would believe he was cheated. Either way, something has to give in order to reconcile the balance sheet of Bill's life and reduce the cognitive dissonance, the emotional pain caused by this conflict. Technique 3, acts of kindness. If one person in particular is the object of scorn, then, if possible, have this individual do an act of kindness for this prejudiced person. It will be difficult for him to dislike someone who is kind to him despite his biased feelings. Faced with this conflict, he will have to adjust his thinking to accommodate the possibility that he may have misjudged this person. Technique 4, Houston, we have contact. Landmark research by Gordon Allport on the nature of prejudice concludes that contact between two groups of equal status in pursuit of common goals can decrease prejudices. Therefore, try to get a prejudiced person to be part of an activity, for example, a sport, business pursuit, community project, with the very people toward whom he holds a prejudice. Be sure, though, that you commingle the different people and that you do not pit one group against the other. Other studies suggest that when a member of a group relies on the others in order to complete a task, liking of group members increased. Therefore, cooperation within the group is a necessary component in order to achieve success. Change the parent who doesn't spend enough time with the kids. While we would like to believe that parents make spending time with their children a priority, this is not always the case. Instead, many mothers and fathers today find they do not have enough time for their offspring because they are overburdened by the many responsibilities of life. The following techniques offer you a variety of strategies to get such parents to find more time for their children. Technique 1, the neighbors are watching. Sometimes a little social pressure may be needed, for example, to get a father more motivated. To accomplish this, the mother sets up father and son or father and daughter activities in the neighborhood. Now the dad will be shamed into going because his wife is the one who created the event. And she will be getting not just one family to spend more time together, but a whole neighborhood. Technique 2. Make a trade. Time is in short supply these days. It is one thing to want parents to spend more time with their children. It's another to help them do it. Make it as easy as possible for them to be able to take the time. In this way, even if, sadly, the parents do not have an overwhelming desire to spend time with the kids, they will not feel as if they are wasting their time and could be doing something else. You are trading what they have to do for what you want them to do. Technique 3. Mutual satisfaction. Parents who do not see the necessity of spending more time with their children will be more inclined to do so if it is enjoyable. So come up with hobbies, sports, and the like that both parents and child enjoy. Then they can spend time together and build a relationship in a way that offers the parents an opportunity to do what they love anyway. Technique 4. Be practical. A mother who is well-meaning finds the day simply gets away from her. Thus, she needs to take practical steps to ensure that the day does not end without her doing what needs to be done, in this case, spending quality time with her children. Note that the amount of time is less significant than the quality. For example, watching TV with a child does not constitute spending time together, and it offers zero emotional satisfaction to the child. Technique 5. The power of hypocrisy. Studies show that human behavior is most readily changed when two things happen. One, when we agree that we should be doing something, and two, when inconsistencies are pointed out between our attitude and our behavior. For example, a study was conducted in California on a college campus in a women's locker room. Women entering to shower were asked to sign a petition that read, "Take shorter showers. Turn showers off while soaping up. If I can do it, so can you." And then the researchers added one thing. They asked the women to answer questions about their showering habits, including the question, "When showering, do you always turn off the water while soaping up or shampooing?" The women who signed the form urging others to conserve water and who were made aware of their apparent hypocrisy then took showers that were half as long as those who either signed the petition or answered questions about their showering habits, but did not do both. The 1-2 punch is extremely effective. When people express an attitude and then are reminded of their previous failures to live up to it, a powerful motivational force is created. Motivate anyone to lose weight. Almost all of us want to be healthy and to look our best, but we often lose out to an inner struggle. So getting someone to lose weight is not a matter of convincing the person to do so, but rather of making it easier emotionally for him or her to do so. The 5 psychological techniques presented in this section help you to clear an emotional path to change a person's eating habits and attitudes toward health. Technique 1. Please help me. You can help someone lose weight by having him do things for you. If you ask him not to buy sweets because you don't want to have them in the house, or to join a gym with you so that it makes it easier for you to work out, you get him to change his habits without consciously agreeing to do so. Additionally, often a person will do something for someone else more readily than he would for himself. So he's happy to oblige, and once he begins to lose weight, you build momentum and increase his desire to get and stay in better shape. Example. Your husband needs to lose weight, but doesn't know it. If your husband needs to drop a few pounds, you might say something like, "Dear, I want to try to get into shape for the summer, but you know I have no willpower. If we can keep candy and cake out of the house, it will be a big help to me. And I find working out so boring, why don't we walk together around the lake? Or maybe you can join the gym with me. Also, I want to try some new low-fat, low-carbohydrate recipes that a friend told me about. I'll pick up the ingredients, and we'll cook it tonight." This technique can be effective because you want your husband to be in good shape, He wants to help you to achieve your goals, and all the while, you are achieving your aim of getting him into shape. The ego can work for or against us. While a person may not have the willpower to lose weight for health reasons, vanity is another story. Thus, a person with a clear-cut objective and deadline will often be inspired to shed excess pounds. So come up with a reason to celebrate, a wedding, reunion, anniversary, and you'll help create a powerful motivating force for someone to lose weight. Technique 2. Strike while the iron is hot. Anything that is put off until Monday will probably be put off again. Inspiration comes with a built-in window of opportunity, so whenever people are motivated to change, help them to do so. By not delaying action, you engage cognitive dissonance. That is, the unconscious mind adopts the belief that what they are doing is important to them. If you take immediate action, something actually becomes more important. Technique 3. Part of a pattern. Behavioral change is easiest to make when the new behavior is incorporated within the context of a routine or pattern. So avoid isolating the behavior. For instance, if you want your son to do his homework, sandwich in the new behavior between things he really likes. When he comes home from school, he first has a snack, then does his homework, and then plays outside. The order should always be the same, and the time should be as consistent as possible. Technique 4. The power of kindness. To make it easy for a person to lose weight, offer the necessary psychological nourishment. The psychology is similar to that used when helping someone who is engaging in self-destructive behavior. Many people constantly criticize the person they are trying to help. However, it is far more effective to give only positive reinforcement for positive behavior and to say nothing when the person falls short. An essential ingredient of healing is unconditional love or, when more appropriate, simple acceptance. The person must know that you love him and or respect him for who he is unconditionally. According to an old expression, that which goes out of the heart goes into the heart. If you truly have his best interest at heart, he will perceive it as such. Technique 5. Connect on a deeper level. A man was very obese, and although he tried everything possible to lose weight, he just could not keep the pounds off. Then, his daughter needed a kidney transplant, and while he could donate a kidney of his own, the doctors could not perform the operation because of his weight. He then proceeded to lose 160 pounds in order to give his kidney to his child. If a father, for instance, were to think of what it would be like if he had a heart attack and died, leaving a young son without a father and causing injurious effects that will forever discolor the boy's life, he might rethink his eating habits. Being reminded of the suffering he would cause his parents, siblings, or friends will also make him think twice about how he lives his life. While he may not be motivated himself, illuminating the suffering he would cause others by not taking better care of himself can be a powerful motivator. How to change anyone's emotional state. Turn the unhappy into happy and the neurotic into normal and make anyone feel emotionally stable, happier, and balanced. Whether it is your patient, parent, friend, or spouse, permanently shift anyone's state for the better. A quick fix pick-me-up. Turn anyone's mood around fast. Do you have people in your life who are perpetual sad sacks, a drain on everyone around them? Give them a quick shot of emotional adrenaline by using any of the psychological strategies that follow and snap them into a better mood. Try these techniques on yourself, too, if you want to go from pessimist to optimist, lightning fast. Technique 1. A long-term investment. To think and behave in a way that says, I care about me, is essential for our well-being. When we live only for today, we send a message to our unconscious that says, I do not care what happens to me tomorrow. This harms us emotionally. Have you ever joined a gym and then found yourself to be in an unusually good mood? You didn't lift a single weight or swim a single lap. Why did you feel so good? because you sent a message to your unconscious that said, I am making an investment in me. When we ignore ourselves, it is just as if someone else were to ignore us. We cannot help but feel lousy. By encouraging someone to take a specific action that says, I like me enough to put time and energy into who I am, you help him to reestablish a sense of self-worth, and that puts him into a better mood. Technique 2. Pure joy. Well-meaning people often try to get a depressed person to do enjoyable things, but they soon find that an unhappy person is an unwilling partner. Depressed people need to feel alive. Joy, the anticipation of something pleasurable, is different from happiness. People who are in a poor mood may have difficulty enjoying themselves. Their minds race, their thoughts are chaotic, and they are simply tired, emotionally drained. They feel like the world is out there, and they cannot extract pleasure from it. They cannot connect. However, if they're given something to look forward to, depressed people can plan, and they can lose themselves in their thoughts about this wonderful future event. This not only gives them something positive to be consumed with, it also makes it easier for them to make changes in their lives. When we are excited about something, we come out of our shell, connect more to life, and thus want to be more a part of the world. Even those who have it together can find themselves a little blue after the holidays. These blues result because no matter how great the holidays were, they could never have lived up to the ideal. When everything is over, people can feel sad because the buildup was so great, and the reality could not compete with the anticipation. Example, your wife has been moping around the house for days. Find something your wife will be excited about and arrange it for a few weeks down the road. It can be anything from a vacation to cosmetic surgery to a visit from out-of-town friends. This emotional carrot will keep her focused on positive and happy thoughts. If necessary, cycle through a revolving array of carrots until she is able to generate enough internal pleasure from doing and then eventually from simply being. Technique 3. Time is life. Living contradictory to our values drains us. A reasonable father would not sell his son for $10 million, but the same dad may spend very little time with that boy. This forces him to justify his actions in a myriad of ways, but in the end, this rationalizing is draining. It too creates a division within him, an emotional battle. He cannot simultaneously believe that X is all important and spend his time, energy, and effort on Y. In order to remain emotionally solvent, he must live, at least to some extent, in accordance with his values and what he really wants in life. Example, as a therapist, you have a patient, Arthur, who cannot seem to get out of his funk. Prioritizing helps to simplify, harmonize, and synchronize our thoughts and life. Encourage Arthur to be authentic and genuine in one area of life and then in some small way to move in that direction. If he's always wanted to be a painter, have him buy paints and canvases. If he believes relationships are important, have him forgive or apologize to someone with whom he no longer speaks. People cannot completely ignore what they believe is important. Moving towards something personally meaningful will help jolt Arthur out of his blues, as well as add to his emotional strength and courage. People who are in a lousy mood are filled with both emotional and physical negativity. They are in a constricted consciousness where they cannot see outside their own wants and needs. Get them to participate in a physical game, a dance, aerobics, or a sport so they can get their body moving. Such activity also releases endorphins, changing their physiology and helping to put them in better spirits. Technique 4. Enough about you. A divorced woman is unhappy. Get her to do something for you by asking for her help or advice. Turning her focus from herself to another is a terrific way to elevate her mood. Psychologically, it works because you make her feel good about herself in three distinct ways. First, you demonstrate trust, making her feel trustworthy and so better about who she is. Next, you give her the chance to contribute, which helps her feel more self-reliant. giving to others makes us feel independent and important, and we need this sense of freedom to feel good about ourselves. Finally, you take her focus off her own problems. The less time she spends consumed with herself, the less energy she gives to negativity. Give the gift of self-esteem. Help anyone to like himself more. Self-respect is the gateway to self-esteem. Simply, we like ourselves when we respect ourselves. But how do we gain self-respect? We gain it when we do what is right over what is easy, or over that which only makes us look good. When we don't act this way, we literally like ourselves less. Within all of us, three inner forces are at odds with each other: the body, the ego, or lower soul, and the higher soul. The body wants to escape from life through sleep, entertainment, and endless distraction. The ego craves attention and control, and the soul wants to do what is right. Doing what is easy or comfortable is a body drive. Overindulgences of this nature include overeating or oversleeping, in effect doing or not doing something because of how it feels. An ego drive can run the gamut from making a joke at someone else's expense to buying a car we cannot afford. In essence, we do something so that we appear in a certain way to others. When we are driven by ego, we do things that project the right image, and we become consumed with power and prestige, things that many people value as ends in themselves, and not as a means to something more meaningful. Our choices are then not based on what is good, but rather on what makes us look good. When we do this, we are not in control of ourselves. However, when we make a choice to do what is right, we feel good about ourselves. Only when we are able to choose responsibly and do so, do we gain self-respect and, in return, self-esteem. This is how self-respect and self-control are intertwined. People who are not in control of themselves and what they really want have no self-respect, as they are slaves either to society or to their own impulses. This explains control freaks. When they do not get the respect they hunger for, the ego's ultimate weapon, anger, engages. This is a defense mechanism against feelings of vulnerability. Anger is the illusion of control that makes them feel powerful, when in fact they are out of control. And the less control people have over themselves, the more they try to control the lives of others. They need to be in charge of something, and since they cannot get traction in their own lives, they seek to do it through influencing the lives of others. These people are often well-meaning. They do want to help. They just come off a bit insistent and pushy because their ego needs for them to be effective. And that can only happen if you take their advice. A quick way to tell if a person has self-esteem is to observe how he treats himself and others. A person who lacks self-esteem may indulge in things for himself to satisfy only his own desires, and he will not treat others particularly well. Or he may overly cater to others because he craves their approval and respect, but not take care of his own needs. Only someone who truly has self-respect will treat both himself and others well. And when we say well, we do not mean he engages in short-term gratification. Rather, he invests in his long-term well-being as well by being kind and good to others, not so they will like him, but because he likes them or because it is the right thing to do. People who have control over themselves have the freedom to choose, and this sense of independence sets off an emotional chain reaction. This chain includes a variety of ingredients that, when present, balance the psyche and, when missing, throw people off. The solution is to infuse people who lack self-esteem with these components to restore them to an emotionally healthy place, rich with self-esteem. 7 Keys to Instilling Self-Esteem. Key 1. Human beings need to be moving. Did you know that successful health clubs usually have hundreds of new members join every month? Yet, the clubs never add one new locker. How can you have hundreds of people joining a club without the owner screaming, "Get the hammer ready and knock down the wall, we need 200 more lockers immediately"? The answer is that health clubs understand human nature. People become elated when they decide to join. They love going to the club, sitting down with the membership person, and signing up. They'll spend hundreds of dollars and lots of hours shopping for a gym bag, sneakers, headbands, warm-up clothes. They're all excited, and they haven't even broken into a sweat yet. Why? Because they are moving forward. If you are not moving toward a meaningful objective, then you cannot be fulfilled. There is no status quo in nature. In order to feel good, to feel alive, human beings need to be striving, moving forward. We are hardwired, driven, to move. As the health club illustration shows, having an objective is one thing, but in order to ensure continual movement, key aspects that nourish the psyche and soul must be implemented as well. Let's clarify this idea. Example, you want your daughter to feel better about herself. The dynamics of the relationship will best determine the objective or job you give your daughter. How big it is doesn't matter, as long as it is significant to her. The only criterion is that it be something she will enjoy doing. For instance, for a child, it could be a hobby or sport. Key 2. The ego needs measurable traction. Full-sized circus elephants are kept with a small rope looped around one leg. They don't try to break free because when they were young and weaker, they were tethered the same way, and after trying and trying to escape, at some point, they gave up. As adults, they could easily tear down the whole circus tent and move about, but they have learned helplessness, and so they don't even try. Learned helplessness, a term coined by psychologist Martin Seligman, exists when a person feels that since she is not in control, she might as well give up. Seligman contended that people are helpless when their actions are perceived as not influencing their outcomes. People need to believe that if they do action X, it will produce result Y. When people do not believe that they can change anything in their life, they lose traction and the will to do anything. Such people need to be reminded that their actions produce results. If they believe that their actions are futile, then they will understandably conclude that they have no control. That is enough to make anyone depressed and frustrated. It can drive people crazy to feel that it doesn't matter what they do. It makes no difference and causes no effect. And since it is easier to damage than it is to create, emotionally unwell people often go for the quick emotional fix. They will make a destructive impact just for effect or to gain attention, rather than labor in positive, constructive pursuits. For true emotional well-being, however, people must feel that they are making a positive, measurable difference. A drop in the ocean does not inspire us, but results lead to the desire for more growth and movement. It may not be enough for people to get the feeling that things are happening. In their darker hours, their ego may need to point to indisputable, concrete proof that they are doing something real. Devise a way for measuring an individual's success so that he can evaluate the effectiveness of his progress. He should feel that he is effective, that he has traction and can exert influence over something or change it. A person who lacks self-esteem may feel as though he is floating with no anchor. This component will help him to feel more grounded and stable. Everything in nature has a cycle, and so if he can actually finish something that he started, not only does he gain a sense of accomplishment, but he also feels more fulfilled from having successfully seen something through to the end. So ideally, progress should come in the form of completing segments of his objective, so his mini successes are self-contained and continue to lift his self-esteem. Change anyone's mind and stop stubborn behavior anytime. At home or at work, it's his way or the highway, and you've had enough. If you're tired of dealing with someone who refuses to see the facts, the 5 psychological techniques in this section can help you to make him more flexible and more open-minded to what you have to say. Technique 1. The crowbar. The crowbar technique, borrowed from my book Never Be Lied to Again, helps you to get a person to begin to think about the possibility of believing differently. Example. You want your friend Sheila to hear you out on a new idea, and she is adamantly opposed to listening to you. Tell Sheila that you want her to agree to think about, listen to, or read certain information, but only if you can achieve some highly difficult and amazing task. For instance, you tell Sheila to write down on a piece of paper a number from 1 to 100. If you can guess what it is, then she will agree to what you want. She will likely agree because she believes that there is little chance that you will guess the number. The psychological strategy here is not about being right, but about Sheila's agreeing to take the chance. In getting her to agree, you manage to slightly adjust her belief system, and this is all that you need. You take her from a no to a maybe. Only someone who would, in the back of her mind, be willing to take your advice would agree to this test. So some part of Sheila, to some degree, is willing. Now you also know that you are not dealing with an impossible person, and now she will have to alter her belief system to allow the possibility, though remote, that what you have to say may make sense. In order to reduce dissonance, Sheila unconsciously adjusts her thinking and will now become more open. Technique 2. Saving face. Whenever possible, it is important to lessen the blow a bit, as it were. A person needs to be able to deflect a direct hit to his ego and justify to himself, and possibly others, his belief up until now. He needs a plausible explanation to the question, why did I believe something for so long if it is not true? Studies show that if a person can point to an outside influence, he can retroactively justify his behavior. The emotional pain of trying to reconcile a false belief dissipates when he can release the pressure by attributing behavior to something other than his own desire. For example, let's say Jim shaved his head and gave up his money, friends, and lifestyle to join a cult. He thinks that he has either done the most idiotic thing in the world, or the cult is a great idea. This dissonance, this pressure, most often is released by taking the easiest, least painful way out. And so, Jim concludes that he made a wise choice, and he bides his time, waiting for the spaceship to arrive. However, if a gun was put to his head and he was forced to join, then the internal pressure is released by this external cause. Simply, he does not have to assume responsibility only to then justify his behavior. Now, the obvious question is, how do you create an external cause after the fact? It is done through information, that is, by giving Jim new knowledge about an old decision. A person will not hold himself responsible for making a wrong turn in the dark. If he could see, that's one thing, but choosing left or right when he cannot see is not really a choice in the first place. So the internal pressure to justify his behavior is greatly released by giving the ego the opportunity to consider that he did the best he could given the information available. But now, in light of additional information, he admits that a different conclusion makes more sense. Technique 3. The power of recall. Fascinating studies of memory and behavior conclude that people often base their self-concept on availability or how easily they can bring information to mind. For instance, if you are asked to think of several times when you acted ambitiously and were able to recall these events with relative ease, then you would think of yourself as ambitious. Conversely, if you could not come up with an example, then you would conclude that you were cautious and conservative. Of course, we can say, for example, that a woman cannot come up with such examples because this is the way she is. However, studies show that even when these memories are few and far between, as in the case of a woman who is not ambitious, if she rehearses recalling them so they are easily brought to mind, she will then see herself as more ambitious. Example: Harvey is helping his brother Ken to be more ambitious. Harvey asks Ken to review several times daily occasions in the past when he acted ambitiously. This facilitates the ease of recall and allows Ken's self-concept to mold itself around this image. For instance, Harvey could say, "Ken, can you tell me about the last time you found yourself doing something really ambitious? Wow, you made reservations to go to Italy and then gave yourself just 6 weeks to learn the language? Okay, what else? You just walked into a place that was hiring and asked for a job? Great. How did that feel? And can you tell me about the time before that and the time before that?" Harvey then instructs Ken to review these occasions vividly several times daily. As the weeks and months go by, newer, more vivid, ambitious behaviors take the place of previous ones. Technique 4. A very narrow bridge. We will work for something, enduring a great deal of pain and sacrifice, if we really want it. Through the power of psychology, we can influence someone's perception, magnifying his desire and making him want something more. It is human nature to want what we cannot have and to want more of what we have to work for. More than just limiting his options or providing a deadline, the less choice a person has, the less clearly he sees what is available to him. He gives greater importance and prominence to what is left. For instance, a person with several job offers is likely to see and evaluate each offer with great objective diligence. A person who has been unemployed for 2 years with a stack of bills on his kitchen table who finally lands a job interview will go over it again and again, thinking about it nonstop, dwelling on every scrap of minutia, filled with fear that he may not get the job. He is obsessed, but only because his options are limited. The odds of getting the job are the same, but his perspective forces him to be less confident and more concerned. The narrowing of options forces human beings to hyper-magnify what is available to them, creating a skewed perspective, forcing them to run toward what is still left. Technique 5. A zest for life. A person's lack of ambition may actually be a lack of passion for how he spends his days. Sometimes, a person is not moving because he is not interested in where he is going. So help him to examine his priorities and goals in life. Once he's honest with himself, he can move ahead more genuinely and sincerely. When someone appears to be unmotivated or lazy, what he really is uninspired. He needs to feel joy in what he is doing so that the pleasure of doing something is greater than the pleasure of doing nothing. Technique 6. You are what you wear. Whatever we care about, we care for. An interesting psychological phenomenon exists whereby the mere act of treating something or someone better makes us like it or the person more. Whenever we invest ourselves in anything, giving our time, energy, attention, we feel more lovingly toward it. Appearance. Have you ever noticed that your mood changes depending on the clothes you wear? The effect of clothing has been shown in numerous studies to influence, sometimes significantly, our attitudes and behavior. For instance, a mock prison experiment showed that men who merely donned guard uniforms became more aggressive, while those playing the role of prisoner and wearing prisoner garb became passive and more reclusive. Haney et al., 1973. Dress-down Fridays, all the rage a few years back, have now been abandoned by many companies after the discovery that employee productivity often slipped on those days. Clothing is more than a reflection of who we are. It has the potential to affect how we are. Environment. If you don't treat your belongings and surroundings with respect, then you are sending a message that says, "It doesn't matter how I live." When you treat anyone or anything as worthless, you also come to regard it as so. Remember that respect and love go hand in hand. This is true for objects and things, as well as for people. Taking care of his environment is a good way to motivate a person to take care of himself. Make anybody more open and expressive. He doesn't share. He hardly even talks. He offers one-syllable responses and sometimes just grunts. The good news is that the ability to get such a person to open up to you is simply a matter of following a specific psychological strategy as outlined in the following. Technique 1. Be smart. Suppose your brother is very closed-mouthed. To get him to open up, you must become the perfect sounding board. This means you should talk about what is on his mind and what he is interested in, listen with your full attention, ask questions and follow-up questions, and show excitement and genuine fascination. Once you get him talking about what he is interested in, it will be much easier for you to steer conversations into another direction, to a topic that you want to talk about. But first, let your brother practice being open in an area where he is comfortable. Encourage him to continue by being actively engaged in what he has to say. He will shut down immediately if he feels you are not listening to him and are bored by what he has to say. Remember, no one wants to pour fine wine into a leaky milk carton. It makes people feel good to open up and express their feelings, but they have to believe that you will keep their confidences to yourself, not blab to others. And no one wants to be judged negatively or to be talked about to others about how he feels. Technique 2. Anxiety loves company. A study by psychologist Stanley Schachter shows that a person seeks out company most when he is afraid or anxious about something. In this experiment, Schachter had two groups of women come to his office laboratory. One group was greeted by a frightening man in a white lab coat who told them they would be given shocks in order to study the effect of electricity on the body. He added that the shocks, while painful, would cause no permanent damage. The other group of women were met by a warm, smiling doctor who said the shocks would produce only a tingling, possibly pleasant, sensation. Both groups were then offered the opportunity to wait alone in a private room or in a larger room with others while the experiment was being set up. Of the 32 individuals in each group, about two-thirds of those in the high-anxiety group chose to wait with others, while most of those in the low-anxiety group chose to wait alone. Technique 3. Pull back. It is rare that a person does not open up in any of his relationships. If he is closed, it is often the case that the other person helps to foster his behavior. This is because relationships seek their own equilibrium. By creating a space where the other person is not constantly in the listening mode, you allow for each of you to take on different roles and behaviors, thus moving him to be more talkative and you to listen more. Technique 4. You looking at me? A study commencing in 1927 by Harvard Business School researchers and named after the plant of the Western Electric Company led to what became known as the Hawthorne effect. One aspect of the study was to determine if better lighting would lead to increased productivity. To everyone's surprise, production increased when the lights were turned up and when they were turned down. What was going on? It turned out that the productivity was the result of the workers being pleased by the attention they received. The actual working conditions, whether they were favorable or unfavorable, didn't seem to make a difference. A little girl who acts up for attention does not care whether she gets a positive response or a negative one. She just wants someone to care enough to do something. This is why parental experts tell us that this child needs private time with her parents to bond and grow. The last thing she needs is to be screamed at. The psychology here is to let your complaints about a person's lack of expression take a back seat to your investing yourself in the person and your relationship, whatever it is. Focus your efforts on being a good friend, parent, spouse, etc., and you may find that he naturally becomes more open and expressive. Technique 5. The Bureau. A study was done with FBI trainees who took part in a simulated abduction. Before the exercise, some of the trainees who were hostages for 4 days were told to concentrate on their feelings. Others were told to focus on the situation. The former group had a much greater need to talk about their feelings. It was concluded that in difficult circumstances, those who focus on their emotions instead of the objective facts had a greater need to connect with and to open up to others. Strenz and Auerbach, 1988. Example. Winston wants his friend Nancy to open up about her feelings toward him. Whenever Nancy finds herself in a frustrating or difficult situation, Winston should pay particular attention. To get her to open up, he should ask questions about her feelings and not facts. For instance, if she had a fight with a coworker, he should say such things as, "It must be so frustrating to deal with someone who doesn't care about your feelings," and, "Are you more hurt or angry?" Such questions will get Nancy to open up much more than would questions about the facts of the argument, who said what to whom, and where the blame belongs. Turn any wallflower into a social butterfly. Bernice doesn't seek out conversation or friendship. She prefers to be by herself, and even if she is bored, she will do anything but go out and meet friends. If you want to move Bernice from the corner of the room to the center of attention at a party, then use the psychological techniques in this section to get her onto the floor. Technique 1. A whole new world. Do you know someone who might engage in behaviors while on vacation that he would never dream of at home? And with little or no dissonance, internal conflict or guilt? Research shows that heightened self-awareness increases one's need for consistency between attitude and behavior. Thus, when a person is in an unfamiliar place with no reminders of his life, the link between attitude and behavior is severed. While logic might dictate that you want a person to be in comfortable surroundings in order to feel easier about socializing, often it is precisely the familiar that snaps him into his old patterns. New places and surroundings help to facilitate new behavior. And while sometimes just one experience can bring a person out of his shell for good, several experiences over a short period of time are most effective for changing the person's behavior in a more permanent way. Technique 2. Improve skills. Give your shy sister, for example, specific tools for improving her interpersonal skills. The ability to connect to others comes naturally to some, but most people need ways to pave the road to smooth conversation. Once your sister feels equipped to handle herself and builds up a track record of small successes, she will become more social and seek out friendships and situations to meet with others. Practical social skills include expressing genuine interest in what someone is saying, responding positively, and asking questions. What is it about skiing that you love so much? How did you become so involved in writing children's books? Have you always lived on the seashore? Technique 3. An engaging outlet. One of the easiest and most powerful ways to get someone to be more sociable is to get him involved in doing something he enjoys. Any hobby or sport where he is with those of a like mind with like interests will help bring him out of his shell. When he is with others who are similar to him and doing what he enjoys, his inner self will be less inhibited. This also helps the person to make friends and enjoy special relationships. When we excel at something, we are happy for others to be impressed by us. Therefore, even though you are dealing with someone who is not sociable, encourage the shy person to attend get-togethers that you arrange. Start with one other person, and then increase the number of attendees over time. In this way, he will feel more comfortable because he is the insider who has been there the longest. And with each new person's nervousness at being the new guy, he will continue to grow in confidence by showing them the ropes. Technique 4. Center of attention. How do you get an introvert out of his shell? Make him the center of attention. This is done by putting him in a situation, a contest or training session, in which he is the most competent. You can even make him a trainer himself. People will naturally seek him out, and he will feel good about it because he knows he will shine. If the person does not excel at anything, then you can put him with those who are younger or in some way disadvantaged, so that he can be the most competent and capable person in the group. Most of the factors that contribute to either shyness or introversion are muted by putting the person in a situation where he is the most capable. He will gain confidence without performance anxiety, and he is guaranteed to receive constant reinforcement and positive feedback. Change a stingy person into a generous one. When the check comes, Mr. Cheapskate's arms are too short and his pockets too long. He is the last one to offer to pay for anything, and whatever he buys is always the cheapest thing he can lay his hands on. If you have had enough, then use these psychological techniques to turn that miserly cheapskate into a philanthropist. Technique 1. Stop begging and empower. When we are entirely in control of a situation, we usually feel a greater sense of responsibility. Giving Mr. Cheapskate complete autonomy over how he spends money may help to change his attitude toward it. Psychologically speaking, the more you berate his behavior, the further you define his self-image as someone who is cheap. He has no real motivation to change. If he knows he is going to hear you say, "Well, what do you know? Mr. Cheapskate finally does something nice," when he does perform an act of generosity, his motivation level will be quite low. You may unwittingly be forcing him into the role of miser. He plays his part well because you play yours. Why not try pulling back and putting him for a trial period in complete control? You may find that he rebounds to a point where he doesn't have to be the bad guy, and so he becomes looser with the purse strings. Example: a woman's husband makes her account for every penny she spends, and she wants him to be more generous. The woman would say something like, "Honey, I want you to know that I'm sorry for having badgered you all these years about how you spend our money. The truth is, if it weren't for your fiscal responsibility, we'd have a lot less to live on now. Of course, I do regret a bit not buying one or two silly things along the way, but you are so thoughtful in every other way, so I am not going to cajole you anymore. If something makes sense for us to buy, you decide, and that's fine with me." Technique 2. Not business as usual. Suppose you find yourself 25 cents short for the bus. If you were to ask a stranger to help, do you think you would be better off asking for a quarter, 37 cents, or some spare change? According to a research study, you're more likely to get results if you ask for 37 cents. Why? Because it makes people think. This study showed that almost twice as many people contributed when asked for this odd amount than when asked for 25 cents. Why wouldn't people do the easier thing, give a quarter instead of a quarter, dime, and two pennies? It seems that asking for 37 cents got people to more carefully consider the request. If money was the only factor, then beggars and panhandlers would get a coin or two from everyone they asked, but they do not. The objective is to get the person to hear your request and give it thought. Asking for something routine and ordinary makes the request easy to dismiss. When a person is forced to more closely consider a request, as one is forced to do with such an odd amount, it makes him more inclined to help. He cannot simply say no and go about his day. Instead, he sees the person looking for bus fare as a human being with a specific need, not just someone mindlessly asking for something. When you want a person to be more generous, you have to be sure he does not dismiss the request without giving you and your needs full consideration. Additionally, asking for an odd amount shows that you understand the value of money, as you are asking only for what you need, not rounding it off for the sake of convenience. Technique 3. A dose of perspective. Have you ever driven by a bad traffic accident and noticed that the people you're in the car with suddenly become nicer to one another? There's a sort of quiet kindness that permeates the air. Or have you ever been to visit a friend at the hospital, and the second you walk out of the lobby doors, you look around and see the world just a little bit differently? You feel a mix of relief, sadness, and optimism. You feel happy to be alive and grateful for what you have. These situations give us a healthy dose of perspective. That is why the best time to solicit a donation or to get someone to help you is when the person has recently had such an experience. He will be more inclined to give as he seeks to attach himself to something that is more real and permanent. Technique 4. Advance, then retreat. In Technique 4, you ask someone for a much larger request than he is likely to agree to. And then after he refuses, you ask for something smaller, the thing you really want. Cialdini et al. Asked college students on the street if they would be willing to volunteer to be an unpaid counselor for juvenile delinquents 2 hours a week for a 2-year period. No one said yes. But then, before the subjects walked away, they were asked if they would agree to take these same kids on a 2-hour trip to the zoo. 50% of the students said yes. However, when students were asked about chaperoning the zoo trip without first being asked the larger request, only 17% agreed. The psychology here is threefold. One, after the other person makes a concession, we feel the need to reciprocate. Two, we don't want to be perceived as unyielding and unreasonable. And three, we want to think of ourselves as good, and so we seek to get rid of that bad taste of not helping by doing something easier and less demanding. Technique 2. Rise to the occasion. Develop a sense of obligation. It's important to let this person know that he is the only one who can help with a particular objective, and because of his help, you are going to, in some way, alter what you were going to do. He also needs to see that the withdrawal of his offer will cause you hardship. If he reneges and there are no repercussions, then he will see that things are no worse off for you than before he agreed to help. Therefore, he will not feel as if he is letting you down because you haven't suffered a loss. This works well for the short term, and it also lays the groundwork to turn him into someone who is more responsible and who follows through on his commitments. Technique 3. I believe you will. There is a classic story about a teacher in one of the worst school districts in New Jersey, where one particular class of kids constantly got C's, D's, and F's. They were disruptive and unruly, the worst. Finally, a new teacher came in from another school district and she took over the class. Inside of one semester, the students' grades improved to B's, C's, and D's. By the second semester, the entire class had an overall B-minus average, something that had never happened before. The school district honored the teacher with a Teacher of the Year award. At the ceremony, the superintendent said to her, "You took the most unruly group of kids, one that no one could come near helping. You made them a class that wanted to learn, wanted to become better, wanted to get good grades, were never absent, and were not disruptive. How did you do it?" The teacher said, "I don't understand what you're talking about. These kids all had above average IQs." The superintendent of the school said, "Ma'am, if it must be told, they really all have below average IQs." The teacher said, "No, look here." And she whipped out a paper and said, "I looked at these numbers before the class started. 125, 130, 140, and 118. I mean, these are some high IQs. When I saw these IQs, I went in there every single day and I trained them and taught them and lectured them like they were smart people. If they asked a question, I said, 'That's a great question. Only smart people ask those kinds of questions.' I treated them like they were real smart people, and they did well." The superintendent said, "Ma'am, those aren't their IQs. Those are their locker numbers." This teacher didn't talk to those kids as though they were idiots. Instead, she spoke to them as if they were bright people. If someone asked a question, instead of saying, "That's a stupid question," as teachers had done before, she responded, "That's a great question. You're a smart person." Every single thing you hear, particularly when you are young and especially from a teacher, you value as gospel. And if a teacher says you're dumb, guess what? You think you're dumb. But a teacher says, "That's a good question. That's a bright question." Guess what? You become smarter because of it. Studies done across a broad spectrum of fields, from military training to the workplace to home care, have drawn a unanimous conclusion, one that is outstanding in its implications. When we have knowledge that a person believes in us, that we are capable, we work harder to meet his or her expectations. Whether you are dealing with children, employees, or the gas station attendant, your expectation of performance will increase the actual performance. Indeed, your confidence in a person and your expectation that he will be more responsible will help boost his own confidence and his expectation of himself. He will not want to let you down, and when you see his true potential, he will in time come to see it in himself. Technique 4. The Fox and the Hen House. When someone slacks off, he very quickly, sometimes even unconsciously, justifies his behavior. However, when a person becomes responsible for getting others to do the very thing he has been lax about, he is more motivated to be successful. He must now reconcile the discrepancy between his own actions and his attitude toward others for violating the same behavior. To release the burden of this internal conflict, he has to either fail miserably at his job or change his behavior. If the incentive to perform well at his job is high enough, then his own behavior will shift to fall in line with his new role. Example: a sales manager wants her salesman, Devin, to be more responsible. Suppose Devin falls short on his quota of sales calls and rarely, if ever, properly fills out his paperwork. The manager can make Devin responsible for implementing a program for making sure that all salespeople meet their quotas and put him in charge of computerizing a new paperwork system. Now, Devin will become a model of responsibility, because in order for him to be successful, he must become more responsible. Bring out the romantic side in anyone. My husband is about as romantic as a rock. He rarely does anything sweet, and I have to beg him to do the little that he does. If you have had enough and want to turn a cold fish into Mr. or Mrs. Romantic, now you can. Technique 1. Adopt a persona. Have you ever met someone who in one situation was one way, and in another completely different, as though he had two personalities? There are many actors who are painfully shy off stage, and who cannot sit for an interview without sweating and stumbling over every word. Yet these same people can go on stage in front of thousands and perform calmly and flawlessly. How do they do it? They are just playing a role. It is not them on stage, but a character who for a while shares the same body. This is a great technique to get someone used to being, feeling, and doing romantic things. Example: Ned wants his wife, Laura, to be more romantic. Ned asks Laura to imagine herself as someone else and then to act as her. Perhaps they could watch a romantic movie, and then Laura could play the role of the actress. They could use props for atmosphere, and if Laura is willing, she could spend time rehearsing her part. Do not underestimate the effectiveness of the psychology here. We all have multiple roles in life. A woman may be a wife, mother, daughter, sister, professional friend, and so on. And with each role, we think, speak, and behave differently. So here, we expand a person's repertoire to include a new role. Technique 2. Emotional nourishment. A person behaves with you to a large extent based on how you make him feel about himself. If you want someone to be more romantic, then you have to give him the capacity to give you what you need. It makes us feel good to give, but we need the emotional fuel to do so. If your spouse is not giving you the romance you want, did you ever ask yourself, am I giving him what he needs? It is no surprise that men and women are different and require different feedings. What may be news, however, is that through simple actions, you can make a big impact on your spouse's romantic expressions. Focus on the following. Men are ego-oriented, so a woman should be sure to tell him how smart he is and how capable and fantastic she thinks he is. Women, on the other hand, are fed more through emotions, affection, interest, words of love, appreciation. If a man feeds his wife emotionally, she will have the fuel and desire to become closer and more romantic. Technique 3. Tell and sell. We must make sure that our spouse knows what we want. It is often the case that your partner is ready, willing, and able to do what you want, but has zero idea what that something is. Make sure you are clear in relaying your wishes. When it comes to romance, it is all too easy, for example, for a wife to assume that her husband knows what she likes and wants. But this may not be so. Once he knows, she should encourage him with positive feedback, so he will become increasingly eager to please her. Technique 4. A whole new you. Sometime, in order to change another person, we have to change ourselves. If you want your partner to be more romantic, try offering a different bait. Without getting into a lengthy discussion on individual tastes and likes, we can say that human beings, as a function of human nature, enjoy new things, so you may want to offer your partner something new in you. Technique 5, a world away. As mentioned in Technique 1, most of us find ourselves in a variety of roles. This can be a hindrance, however. If your husband sees you in a role that is not romantic, he may have a hard time shifting gears. In other words, while a woman may be a terrific mother, her husband needs to see her as his wife in order to feel romantic. And while a husband may be a good and attentive son to his aging mother, his wife needs to perceive him in another way. Sometimes the romance loses its bloom because our perception of the other person is locked into an unromantic mode. The more time a couple spends together, the more intertwined these various roles become. In order to regain that spark, you need to isolate out your relationships with each other from all the roles you are involved in. Example: Josh needs to be in husband role when he wants to be romantic. Conversations about the guys at work, garbage pickups, and allowable tax deductions may be interesting, but they will interfere with his romantic side coming through. He should keep the atmosphere and conversation focused on his wife and himself, so that she sees him clearly in the role that most inspires and excites her. Technique 2. Train him. A person will treat you the way you train him to. If you do not let him know that certain conduct is unacceptable, then he may say and do whatever he wishes. Oftentimes, a person is testing the waters to see what he can get away with. And if you do not speak up for yourself, then you are, in effect, condoning his behavior. When he does something you consider to be inappropriate or disrespectful, you need to tell him. Of course, how you say it makes a big difference, as illustrated in the following. Example: You want your colleague, Wilma, to stop being a verbal bully. In front of others, Wilma says that you are incompetent. Avoid the temptation to say anything right then and there, because then she will have to save face by defending herself. The next chance you get, in private, say something like, "Wilma, I'm sure you didn't mean anything by it, but I want you to know that what you said was offensive." She will either apologize or defend herself. If she apologizes, say thank you, smile, and let her know you appreciate her apology. If Wilma tries to defend herself, her rationale will probably be that either you're too sensitive or she was just trying to help. Either way, don't argue. You simply say, "I'm sure your reason was good, but what you said was offensive to me." And that's the end of the conversation. Technique 3, outsmart him. As we said, a person treats you poorly because he needs to, whether it's a 10-year-old on the playground or a 50-year-old at work. This person does not like himself, and so he takes it out on you. You have a few options. You can change how he feels about himself, change how he feels about you, or take away the feeling that he gets when he tries to bully you. Then, even though he still has the need, you no longer fill his craving. Using Technique 3, you will take away the feeling that he gets. It's fast, and it works. You do this by undercutting his power, as illustrated in the following examples. Example 1. Jason wants Marvin, the lunchroom bully, to stop picking on him. The scene is always the same. The bully goes over to Jason when people are around, picks up his lunch, and pours out his milk. To change this scenario, when the bully comes over, Jason might take one of the following steps. He can say, "Look, everyone, here comes Marvin, the bully. Watch how important he is. Because he's bigger, he can pour my milk out. Wow." When Marvin approaches, Jason can take his own milk and spill it out in front of Marvin. Example 2. Alice is always teasing Shirley on the playground. Mean Alice comes by every day to make fun of Shirley in front of her friends. What Shirley should do is shift the power so she is the one in control. Shirley might say, "Okay, everyone, be quiet and give Alice your full attention because she doesn't get enough at home. Okay, go ahead, Alice. You can make fun of me now." Now Alice is getting permission to be mean. This really takes the wind out of her sails, and after a few such treatments, she will no longer enjoy teasing Shirley. While these illustrations deal with children, the psychology is easily and effectively applied to adult situations using much the same language. Erase the anger and make anyone more forgiving. Someone does something to us and we get mad. But why? Why do we respond with anger? Anger is the illusion of control. We hold on to the anger because then we feel that we have control over the relationship. The person is now dependent on us to forgive. Anger is a defense mechanism to feeling vulnerable. Yet in the end, it is only an illusion, and it offers no real satisfaction or lasting psychological comfort. If there is someone in your life who is holding on to a grudge, try the 4 psychological techniques that follow to get him to be more forgiving. Technique 1. The approach. Before you begin to work your psychological magic, make sure your approach is sound. Following are some guidelines for how and when to get a person in the ideal state to accept an apology. When you are in a good mood, things do not bother you as much as when you are already upset over something. When you are upset, even the slightest annoyance can get under your skin. But when you are in a good mood, you tend to be more open, receptive, and eager to mend fences. So do not bring up the subject of an apology unless the person is in a good mood. Let the angry person know that he is in complete control. He can leave the conversation whenever he wants. He will not be begged to stay. He does not have to commit to anything else. He does not have to agree to do anything other than listen. There will be no commands or anything to persuade him. The angry individual needs to understand how the other person is suffering. It helps to reestablish balance. It is important to convey to the angry one that his misdeeds and the ensuing loss of the relationship have caused his enemy real pain. If the angry person does not believe that the other really cares and is hurting, you will not be successful. The angry person must know that the other person not only feels great pain and regret, but has also taken steps to correct the behavior. This shows that he's changed. It's not enough for him to feel bad. He must also undergo a kind of transformation to demonstrate that he is different from what he was before. Technique 2. Nothing to show for it. It is important to let the angry person, let's call him Dennis, know that the actions of the other person, let's call him Owen, produced no enjoyment, financial gain, or any other type of benefit. Owen needs to explain that not only was his behavior a mistake, but it also did not produce the anticipated benefits either. Remember, the key lies in restoring balance to the relationship, be it personal or professional. If Owen had gained in some way, then he would have to give back more in order to set things right. If he can make an investment, for instance emotionally or financially, and show effort without benefit or progress, so much the better in restoring balance. Technique 3. Good for you. Even from a selfish standpoint, it is good for us to let go of the negativity of the past. Relationships are at the cornerstone of our mental health, and those that have soured drain us emotionally, spiritually, and physically. Let a person know that whether or not he feels he is in the right, it's good for him to forgive. Many studies show conclusively that a person's overall emotional and physical health improves by the simple act of forgiving another. This is true whether the motivation was to ease the pain of the offender or simply to release one's own emotional burden. It is the strong who can forgive, while the weak need to hold on to anger and bitterness to feed and soothe a fragile ego. As we discussed, anger makes us feel grounded, and it gives us the illusion that we are in control and powerful. But really, it is the weak who need anger. It is, after all, a false sensation, and it only fuels our ego while leaving us deflated. Example: a clergyman wants to help Jean forgive her father for abuse, even though he is dead. Clearly, nothing Jean does will affect the relationship. Therefore, the therapist has her simply say the words, "I forgive you," while thinking of her father. If she does this, her attitude will be transformed. You do not have to understand why someone did what he did in order to forgive the person. In truth, it often doesn't matter. Whether the abuser was abused himself, suffered from mental illness, or was an alcoholic is almost beside the point. Jean forgives him, not for him, but for her. Because forgiveness does not excuse her father's behavior, it allows her to put the past where it belongs, behind her. Even if she does not believe the words as she says them, after repeating them sincerely 50 times a day, she will in time come to embrace the meaning, significance, and truth in what she is saying. Do not underestimate the value of this technique. Affirmations can be a powerful tool in changing how you feel. Technique 4. A little magic. Misdirection, the main principle in most magic tricks, is the art of drawing the audience's attention to one place while the magician, undetected, manipulates the situation. We know how effective misdirection can be with children. Their unrelenting crying, screaming, and indignant railing is replaced with a whimper and then squeals of delight when a lollipop is introduced into the equation. Of course, adults require a bit more, but the psychology is the same. Have something that you can offer the person that will redirect his attention, and you will have an easier time convincing him to forgive. Stop passive-aggressive behavior in anyone. A woman is unable to confront conflicts head-on, so she indirectly gets back by causing harm or inconvenience in a seemingly innocent manner. If you've got someone in your life who is driving you crazy with passive-aggressive ways, then use the following techniques to get the person to confront and discuss instead of secretly seething and plotting. Technique 1. Reverse, reverse, reverse psychology. Ask for the person's advice on the very thing that he is making difficult for you. The psychology behind this technique is twofold. First, the person makes an investment, but he also wants his investment to pay off, and that can happen only if things go easy for you. If he makes life more difficult, the stress and turmoil may cause you to be ineffective, and his advice useless. We all want to be right, and so he will try to make things as easy as possible for you so that you can benefit from his wisdom. When something is bothering you, or another person's actions frustrate or annoy you, bring it up. Don't let it fester and become more serious than it already is. Keeping feelings inside you is rarely good for a relationship or for you. Some guidelines for bringing up your concerns are: wait 24 hours before saying anything. Approach him when you and he are not pressed for time or in a lousy mood. And couch what you have to say in non-accusatory terms. Technique 2. Make life easy. You want to make it as easy as possible for this person to talk about what is bothering her. She will not need to lash out in passive ways if she is able to air her grievance with you face to face. This, however, can be difficult for her. So put a plan into action that calls for her to tell you what is bothering her every day. In this way, she gets into the habit, in a non-threatening way, of saying what is on her mind. If she is uncomfortable doing this, then ask her to simply write down her grievances. You will give thought to them, and with her permission, discuss them with her. Technique 3. I'll show you. This technique makes it almost impossible for someone to act passive-aggressively toward you. First, you bring his behavior into the open by telling him that you are aware of what he has been doing. Next, you tell him that you know why he has been doing what he has and that you completely understand. The trick here is to make your reason something other than his behaving passive-aggressive. Example: Horace has a friend, Wallace, who keeps making fun of him in public. Whether or not Horace has told his friend not to make fun of him doesn't matter. What he says now is, "Wallace, I understand why you make fun of me in front of everyone. It's because you think people will like me more than you, and so you say things to try to make yourself look better and me worse. You can't help yourself, even if you want to." Wallace, of course, denies the behavior, his motivation, or both. Horace then follows up saying, "I'm sorry, maybe I hit a nerve. Let's just drop it." Now, any time a situation comes up, if Wallace makes fun of Horace, he will be admitting that Horace was right, and his ego won't let him do this. Technique 4. The takeaway. Whatever a person is doing to bother you, make it worse. By making conditions less favorable, you cause him to seek a truce and move to an emotional middle. This can be done in two ways. You can either, 1, make a declaration that unless he does his part, you will no longer do yours, or 2, return the passive-aggressive favor and take action without saying anything. At some point, it will force him to bring it up, and then you can have a more meaningful discussion because he will be suffering right along with you. Technique 4 should be used only when necessary, as it can create for a short time more friction than currently exists. Technique 5. Backfire. Your brother inconveniences you because it gives him some type of emotional satisfaction. But if what he does always seems to backfire, and he ends up harming himself instead of you, he will quickly abandon his ways. Even though this process is largely unconscious, if your brother is unsuccessful in his attempts to inconvenience you, he will stop them as a matter of self-preservation. Change the chronically late person. If it's one thing Evelyn is known for, it's always being late. She offers up one excuse after another and sometimes doesn't even bother to do that. To change Evelyn, we'll apply a variety of psychological techniques. Constant lateness is usually caused by one of two unconscious motivations. One is that a person like Evelyn needs to feel in control. Keeping others waiting puts her in a position of power, even if she's just late for a meeting or for dinner. However, if she's also late for things that only inconvenience her, if she rushes to catch a flight for vacation or never sees the beginning of a movie, then she may simply have low time awareness. Some people just feel time differently. Evelyn may be unable to effectively judge and manage her time well, often ascribing a task to take a shorter time than she should, and getting caught up in endless distractions. Regardless of the motivations, if you have had enough of waiting for someone, then try the following psychological techniques to get the person to be on time every time. Technique 1. Pay the price. If the stakes are significant, you may be able to bring about a change in behavior. In Technique 1, you tell the person in advance that you will wait for a reasonable period of time and then you will leave without him. End of discussion. This is not to be done cruelly or coldly, but simply as a matter of necessity. You want to be on time. You would love for him to join you, but if he is unable to do so on an agreed-upon timetable, then you have to go without him. Set a time that is unusual. Instead of 9 o'clock, make it 8:57. Studies show that people are more likely to remember an unusual time and will attach a greater importance to it. Additionally, when a meeting starts at a round time, such as 9 p.m., people often assume it really won't get started until 9:10 or so. But an odd time makes people think that the time the meeting starts has greater significance. Technique 2. Relearning time. A great way to eliminate chronic tardiness is to retrain the person in how to tell time. If he continually underestimates the time involved for particular tasks, you can show him, make him consciously aware, just how long things take. When someone says he will be over in 5 minutes, he's likely wrong. Get the person to be real and honest with time. Retraining cannot be done overnight. But a person can indeed be retrained to be more time aware. This technique is used with great effectiveness in time management classes, where people see in black and white just how much time they waste and lose, allowing them to better plan their day. Technique 3, let's make a deal. In this technique, you appeal to the person's sensibilities. Clearly, he has a hard time being on time. Therefore, pick your battles. Your need to be on time conflicts with his desire to not be bound by time. So really, why should you always get your way? So make a deal. He has to be on time only for specific events, and at other times, he is welcome to be late. Additionally, to prevent him from being late for the times he agrees to be punctual, attach a penalty to his tardiness, regardless of how good his excuse is. Technique 4, psychological anchors. Do you remember the lessons learned by Russian scientist Ivan Pavlov? In short, in the course of an experiment, he noticed that the dogs he was working with began to salivate whenever he walked into the room. They had learned that Pavlov's appearance meant that they would be fed. They salivated because they associated Pavlov with food, even without the presence of food. This is what's called a conditioned reflex, and we have many examples of this in our own lives. For instance, maybe the smell of cut grass brings back fond memories of your childhood. Or any time you meet someone with a certain name, you have unpleasant feelings toward him because of a former experience with a person of the same name. These are all anchors. An anchor is an association or link between a specific set of feelings or an emotional state and some unique stimulus, an image, sound, name, or taste. When someone's current actions are associated with unpleasant stimuli, he will begin to form an unconscious link and get a negative feeling from what was once pleasurable.